This show might not have a lot of canonical queerness, but we're big-braining it here. This week we're gonna discuss a day of the week, or a show better known as Wednesday. It's great, it's pretty bad, and all around fun. So join us for a little dark horror and teen angst, and maybe just a little bit of gay stuff.
Welcome to In Media Les, a podcast about queer relationships in media. I'm Chloe.
And I'm Tired Val.
Tired Val? You're not the normal co-host.
I'm not. I've been abducted by aliens.
Yeah, okay. Well, this is going to be our chill, cool session. We'll be discussing Wednesday, created by
not
Alfred.
Not the day, the show.
The show. Well, maybe also the day. You don't know. Created by Alfred Goh and Miles Miller, starring Jenna Ortega as Wednesday and Gwendolyn Christie, Ricky Lindholm, Jamie McShane, Hunter Doohan, Percy Hines-White, Emma Myers, Joy Sunday, Georgie Farmer, Naomi J. Agawa, Christina Ricci, and Musa Mustafa. So what I found was interesting as I was reading the wiki, Tim Burton directed 4 of the episodes.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
And, the composer, whose name I shall look up right now, he actually also wrote the music for, I believe, the early 2000s Spider-Man movies.
Wait, no, it's Danny Elfman, dude.
I just worked so long, Chloe. Okay, I do not know what day of the week it is. I know it's Elfman. What is wrong with me?
The guy, you know, okay, of all the things you can know Danny Elfman for, though, the guy who did the Spider-Man.
The guy who did the Spider-Man soundtrack, you know? That fellow with the tattoos and the...
Not Nightmare Before Christmas. Not Men in Black.
No, there's a reason I mentioned Spider-Man specifically. Because when the Wednesday theme plays and the spider comes onto the screen, the music changes to that theme for a second. Did you notice that?
No.
Well, you should re-listen to it and then you won't be able to un-listen.
Great.
Yeah. It's really cool. It's a little nod to Spider-Man.
Yeah. It's interesting. Okay, so I was... This is the thing. I checked the wiki before we started recording, and I was actually amazed at how many very famous people had their hands on this, of what this... I'm going to say this, and I hope I don't get eviscerated for this. I feel like this feels like a very run-of-the-mill CW-style show.
Oh, it is.
Like, to know
it
that...
It is not good.
Tim Burton was involved in this, and just like... It makes sense that, okay, he directed the first 4 episodes, which were the episodes that were actually good, whereas the last half of it was pretty... I don't know. Okay, here's my problem with this. Okay, so plot summary, first of all. It's Wednesday gets in trouble, and Wednesday Adams, and she gets sent to a boarding school, and then there's a murder, and it's a monster, and... She has to track down the murderer, monster, whatever is going on. Okay, here's my problem with it. Mm-hmm. If you took this plot and put it as Riverdale, it would have just been Riverdale. Like, there is nothing that distinguishes this from Riverdale except for the fact that the protagonist is a goth girl.
It is, and I say this in the best possible way, it's not a good show. But I will also say that I couldn't stop watching it. Because it was very enjoyable. Okay. And as a person who likes analyzing media, it was it was like painful in a way, because you just knew everything.
Yeah.
And while I would actually prefer to know everything as opposed to some shows that like have no logical follow through on anything.
Name it, right? Name the show, as always.
Game of Thrones.
Okay. Specifically the last 3 seasons, I would say.
I do prefer having foreshadowing, even if it's like punching you in the face if it's just so glaringly obvious, I still prefer that to like a show that is incoherent.
Sure. That's not a very high bar that you're setting here.
Yes. But I legitimately liked watching this show. Like, it was just entertaining.
It wasn't hard to watch. I will say that. I don't know. I don't know if I liked watching it.
It did take me like 3 weeks to get through it. 2 or 3 weeks. I watched maybe a couple of episodes, you know, here and there. And then I finished it yesterday. I binged the last three. And the acting was decent for the most part.
I thought sometimes Ortega did a fine job.
Yeah, she was really good. And a lot of her supporting cast was really good. Let me take a look so I don't butcher names.
Okay. Yeah. The guy who played Xavier, Percy Hines White, was really good at just being this, like, he just always had this inscrutable expression of just, like, teen angst that was, like, very perfect.
He annoyed me so much.
I know. He was very annoying and awful, but he was really good at it.
Emma Myers did a really good job as Enid.
Yes. I loved her. Roommate and, like, bubbly werewolf.
But excellent, like, best friend.
Yes, like pink, rainbow-obsessed werewolf.
I mean, Gwendolyn Christie was really good.
Yes.
Joy Sunday, who plays Bianca, amazing. I really like the story she got to. And I don't know, just a lot of really good supporting cast. Well,
again, the Bianca thing was so straight out of Riverdale that, like, the sirens run like a lifestyle cult. I was just like, this is the most Riverdale freaking thing. Oh my god.
Look, it is what it is.
Okay.
But I do commend them on having her not be like a villainous mean girl. Like, in the end, she is a student. She's just a child, right? She might be a bully, but she's not even that much of a bully, honestly, the whole show. Yeah. And then in the end, she really does save the school in a way. She does way more than Xavier does with his bow.
Yeah, she actually gets the assist at the end.
And that was a very interesting choice.
Yeah.
I do have thoughts about that. But I feel like I want to ask you just... So I have my reasons for suggesting we talk about this show. But to you, does any of this feel like... Like, why are we talking about this show? Because you very readily
agree. That's a good question. So I think I know why we're talking about the show. Well, first of all, we should state that there's one canonical queer couple, mm-hmm. which is Eugene's parents.
Yes. And they're in the show for maybe 20 seconds.
And then maybe there was, like, I think there's a background character student who looks non-binary, maybe.
I don't know how to speak English. The backup cast are all super diverse. Like, if you just look at students, super
again,
diverse.
It's very, very, very Riverdale in that capacity. But I think, at least from what I've seen on Tumblr, is that Wednesday and Enid are shipped a lot. So mm-hmm. I think that's part of the reason why we're talking about this.
It is. Yeah. I don't know if you've been on Tumblr since last night.
But I have gone
on a binge of their ship tag and just reblogged a million things. But that is actually not why I decided that we should talk about this.
Okay, then enlighten me.
There are a lot of metaphors. First of all, the entire school is outcasts, right? They're literally called outcasts. There's a lot of queer metaphors in there, just in general, because the students have to hide a lot of themselves. For example, Enid's mom wanted to send her to conversion therapy. Like, there are a lot of themes throughout the show.
The conversion therapy thing was super, again, it's super Riverdale the way it was brought up and discussed.
There are just a lot of these sort of things. Also, like, let's be honest, Principal Weems and Morticia, they had something going.
Yeah, that she was not into Gomez. Going on there.
She was not. There was tension between them. Gomez was just a guy who was happy to be there.
Yeah.
There's a lot of themes here that have a lot to do with just being on the outside, being bullied for it, or having to defend one's identity, things like that. And I also think that there are a lot of, like, not gay queer relationships, but just, like, very strange relationships that develop in this story.
Right.
For example, like, the friendships that the characters form with each other, excluding People and Wednesday. I mean, outside of that character. There's a lot of, like, types of friendships that we don't necessarily see on TV very often. Like, a lot of boys are friends without having to, like, punch each other and things, and roughhouse. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of support between men. There is a lot of just, like, things that characters do that in a show that, for example, like, I've never seen Riverdale, so I feel weird saying, like, in Riverdale, because I don't know.
Oh my god, how have you not, how have you survived this long?
I'm lazy. But, like, in a lot of shows, you just have these friendships that feel kind of empty and all revolve around the main character, if not the main, like, two or three core characters. Here, everyone felt very much intertwined, and that is a fairly new experience for me personally. I don't know what it is necessarily, but something about it just feels very extraordinary to me.
Interesting.
Is there anything that you would notice like that? Like, for example, I guess Ajax, he's a very soft boy.
He is a soft boy, and so is Eugene.
Eugene, yes, but like, his type of character is very often presented as, like, the very nice kid who does deserve a lot of what he's seeking, but, like, you know, he's also the sort of character that doesn't always get it.
Yeah.
But for Ajax, he is a part of, like, the popular kids. Okay. He is one of the popular kids, right? And at first, we don't really notice him that much. But he's a very soft boy, and there's not a lot of soft boys out there in shows like these. There are more now, but, like, I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, there's not that much toxic masculinity in a lot of characters. And I like that, and it's weird and new and refreshing.
I think if you'd seen Riverdale, you would see all these characters are kind of, they map onto a lot of, like, stuff that was established in Riverdale, to me, at least.
Mm-hmm. And I am so aware of that. I was just gonna say, yesterday I was talking to my mom, and my mom asked, like, what kind of show is this? And I was like, oh, you know, the type of show that my sister would watch, and she watches a lot. She's a teenager, so she watches a lot of these sort of shows with the drama and the stuff. And my mom immediately was like, oh, I understand exactly what type of show this is now. Because there are a lot, like, this is a genre that is built on these tropes. So it is very solidly in that category, which is why it's not, like, the most amazing writing, but it was very fun. I interrupted you. You were saying something.
I didn't have that much to add. I don't know. I think you enjoyed this more than I did, to be honest, because I started it in November and got three episodes in and then gave up and was just like, oh, I guess I'll just never finish it. And I didn't really miss it that much. Like, it wasn't like something I was going to go track down and finish at any point until you suggested we do an episode on it.
Well, you caved very easily, and I appreciate that.
Because it was something I was already halfway done with, and I might as well. Yeah. You know, like, it wasn't bad TV. It's not like it wasn't torture.
It was bad TV, but, like, in a not depressing way, I guess. I don't know how to explain it other than that, like, some shows are just really bad and you don't want to watch it. We've talked about a couple, but, like,
it's the good type of bad, not the bad type of bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I like the Addams Family movies growing up. Like, I remember really loving them, and then I remember playing Fester's Quest on the SNES at my cousin's house a lot. So, like, I've got some connection with the Addams Family, and I always thought they were kind of neat. You know, I do wish Cousin It would make an appearance, but
I know. Can't have everyone.
What?
Season? No, I was agreeing with you.
Oh, okay.
Season 2. They gotta.
Yeah, right? You gotta bring in Cousin It. I mean, they had thing. I'm glad Uncle Fester, well, Fred Armisen as Uncle Fester was really perfect casting. You can tell he's just having the time of his life. Okay, this is what we should talk about, is the casting of the Addams Family. Because I feel like there was some criticism that I read online of Luis Guzman as Gomez Addams, but I disagree. I think that's perfect casting. If you've read the original Addams Family like comics, which is where they started, it was like a cartoon in the New Yorker in the 1940s. And the whole thing about it was that, like, he is supposed to be, like, he's totally supposed to be on some level kind of dating up in terms of dating Morticia. And Morticia is, like, supposed to be smarter and more extroverted and hotter than him. And they totally got that vibe. And I think that was one, if I had one criticism of the depiction in the 1990 series, which was Raul Julia, I believe his name is, who was most famous for, what did he do? That was like his most famous work. He did a ton of things, but he did a lot of stuff, and he was M. Bison in Street Fighter. That's the one thing that a lot of the memes come from. But he did a bunch of other things too. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the thing is that he was too
suave.
Yes.
He was like a man's man, but in a very like romantic way.
Right. And he had this whole like, I don't know, smoking jacket. I don't know, like, I'm just the coolest guy. I'm with this rich, wealthy guy who's also kind of weird, but untouchably so. And whereas I think Luis Guzman does a really good job at capturing this, like, I'm just a weird dude who is a total wife guy, right? Like,
he is a huge male wife.
He is a wife guy. And I love my wife, and she is going to rule. And Catherine Zeta-Jones knocks it out of the park. I didn't even realize it was her at first.
She was really fun in this.
Yeah.
Like, the scene where Wednesday is digging the grave, and she's, like, looking at her nails, and is like, eh, it's okay, you can do it.
Yeah.
Like, just little moments like that were really good. I will say that Gomez does have depth to him, too. He seems like a very simple man, but then remember the scene where Wednesday talks to him in jail?
Yeah.
And he is telling her this story, and he's just lying. He is just lying through his teeth, and he knows that she knows. And, like, that is the scene that really made him a good character to me. Because up until that point, he was just kind of there hanging out like a doofus, right? Just kind of knowing what's happening, but not entirely being present. And we got to see such a cunning side to him. And for in that instant, it was like, oh, that is why they're together. And like, I really, really liked how they did that.
Yes. Going through the family, Pugsley, I think, was fine. We didn't get too much of Pugsley.
Which I'm glad. We didn't need Pugsley in here. They like, I didn't like what they did with him. Because in the movies, he matches the Addams Family vibes, you know what I mean? And here he's just like a bullied kid.
Yeah, and he's supposed to be a little more, I don't know, like a little more of the like Addams Family, like mischief kind of side of things.
Yeah, like he could have gotten bullied for weird things he did, not just for being like a loner little guy.
Also, this is a freaking wild fact here. In the 1970s, there was an animated series about the Addams Family in which Pugsley was voiced by actress Jodie Foster.
Hey! He did have lesbian vibes in the old movie. Not the old movie, but like the 90s movie.
Yeah, well, that was not Jodie Foster.
That wasn't, think. But
that Pugsley was not Jodie Foster.
Really? Oh, okay.
She was unrecognizable. They transformed her for that role.
That's fun.
Yeah, yeah. I guess he. I don't know. Like whoever played Lurch, Lurch was good. I don't know.
He lurched.
He lurched. But Fred Armisen as Uncle Fester was inspired. I just love Fred Armisen in general. I have never seen Parks and Rec except for the episode that he was in.
Straight to jail. It is one of my favorite gifts.
It's a great gif. That episode, he's so good. And I don't know if you've ever seen him on like any kind of late night TV, but he's like the most talented guy there is. But anyways, and then
he's a funny man.
And then Thing, they did a really good job capturing Thing's
personality. Oh my god, my favorite character.
With just a hand.
Yes. The scene that most affected me was when Wednesday cried. One thing right. was stabbed, like, because of how they captured Thing.
Yeah.
Say more.
I want to know about Thing, how they, did they, okay, like, part of me is wondering at parts of it, like, because it looked really good, and it didn't really look like bad CGI that you sometimes see in these kind of.
I think it's just a hand, but like, it's like, a person's hand.
Yeah, they, like, recorded someone's hand on a green screen, and then, like, edited out the other parts of it, but like it's really well done. And I was just thinking about some of the other Netflix shows we've watched where there's been, I don't know, like it's still kind of CGI in that sense. Even if it's a person's hand, they still have to like put it into the scene and get the lighting right and everything. They did a really good job making it look nice and like it was there and that it's like a thing and it's not just this crappy CGI hand.
And they could have very, very easily done that. I'm so glad they didn't. Yeah, you're right. I didn't even think about that, but whoa. Yeah. That would have been awful.
So I thought that was great. And then, of course, I think we need to come to Wednesday, who... Mm-hmm. What did you feel about her having psychic powers? That's my question for you.
Once again, didn't care that much about, like, the show in general.
Yeah.
Because... It's just a show you watch to pass the time, and it's super fun, and it left an impression. It did. Legitimately liked it. But, like, they could have given her flying powers and super strength for all I cared. Like, it was fine. It fit the vibe.
I was going to say I actually liked it, because there's something, like, I feel like the trope of, like, the little girl who knows more than she should is actually, like, a well-established, like, horror trope. And playing
it does
into
have
that
like Cassandra vibes.
Sense. Yeah, like, you know, the creepy girl that the protagonist runs into who somehow knows something that she shouldn't. Like, that's a classic horror trope. I'm sure if we looked it up on TV tropes, there'd even be one for it. And so I thought actually playing into that actually worked. And I did like the idea that the visions were kind of unreliable at some
that's
level.
That's always fun. Yeah.
Yeah. So that they couldn't be like perfectly trusted. And I found her as a character, actually, she was the best part of the whole series, which is not
absolutely
surprising. It was kind of funny to me that, like, if you go back and watch, like, old Hey Ash, what you playing? I feel like Ashley Birch was basically, like, did Jenna Ortega know about Ashley Birch's Hey Ash, what you playing? Like,
the body language and
the
like,
body
the
language.
Walking
just,
and...
Yes. It was just so perfectly like, it was just like what Ashley Birch used to do. This very like, I am the best. I don't know. You are beneath me. Like, it was just like the whole thing Ashley Birch used to do. And it just kept reminding me of that. But it's awesome to kind of see it in a show. Okay, let me ask you this question, because this is a question I was pondering last night as I was falling asleep. I actually was thinking about this question, which is, would this show have been better if there wasn't a murder mystery?
Huh. That is a really good question. I think it did need to be a mystery, because the first movie was a mystery. Well, not the first. The first movie I watched... The movies I grew up with.
The modern 90s movie. Yeah. Yeah. It is the mystery of like Fester. Who is he? Like, why? What are they trying to steal from the family? Yeah. Yeah.
And then the second movie is where she went to camp, right?
Yes.
Like, that one worked because the first one was so good. If the second movie came out first, I don't think it would have been as iconic as it is now. Because it like, nothing really happens in it. They have a kid. It's a weird kid. Or is that a different movie as well? I don't remember. I'm conflating all of those. Basically, the first one was a really good movie, and it allowed for the rest of that franchise to do whatever they wanted. Like, we had a movie where they just, the kids go to camp and, like, terrorize the people there in the best way, right? But yeah. I don't know if it would work in a TV show, like, long form. I think it... Why is there a farting motorcycle outside my window, Chloe?
Oh, because it's New York. Fart cars.
There was a dog barking for like 15 minutes, and then there's a motorcycle, and that is my life. Yeah. But I don't know if this show would have worked without a mystery, but you seem to have thought about this a little more than my off-the-cuff answer. Okay. So educate me.
Okay. Well, my feeling, I kind of wanted them to lean in more into the mysteries of the school, which I thought would be interesting. Like, maybe if they set up Nevermore Academy as, like, this place of, like, there's a lot of mysteries going around. Like, we know there's a secret society, but, like, the nature of that secret society gets revealed pretty unceremoniously to us pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. And we know that, like, her parents had a history there with some, like, mysterious parts involved with it. Where, like, you know, because, like, Morticia founded the secret society or something. And there was something where she commented, like, about, like, what its nature was. And then that was never explored. And then part of me was like, I don't know, like, this whole, like, normies versus outcasts thing that is, like, this tension with the... And it's, I know what they're inspired by, which is that, like, you know, a lot of college towns, it started, I think the classic example is Oxford in England, where you've got the townies and the gownies.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, because the professors and the students used to wear, like, the academic robes, and so those were the gownies, and the townies were the people who lived in the town, and there was always some tension because... You know, the gownies are from all over and the townies are kind of normal salt of the earth types who live in the town. And so that, I mean, that's like what it's drawing from. And I do like the idea of showing like the tension between the town and the college, but it was a little silly that they had like names for each other that were like normies and outsiders. I also...
Yeah, it's like zombies. Like walkers and Zeds, yeah. And munchies and whatever.
Oh, God. I also don't understand why the sheriff was so skeptical of everything when there's literally a college full of monsters in town. But he seemed so skeptical that like anything supernatural could be happening.
And it made sense in the end, right? Because like he was protecting his kid.
Yeah.
But at the same time, in the context of how the show was written and laid out and when it was revealed that Tyler was the boogeyman, like, it didn't work. Even though I do kind of like the character, like the sheriff character, I do like him. I thought he could have done more. He was a weird character.
He was doing the Archie's dad from Riverdale. It was just like very similar vibes.
Yeah, he was like, he was kind of like Stiles' dad from Teen Wolf as well, where he was mostly useless. He's just like a cop guy who shows up and looks at the crime scene after everything happened already. And it makes sense after we know, of course it makes sense.
Yeah.
But during the show, it's like, it was a very weird balance of good cop and, like, competent cop versus just, like, this weird, stubborn police officer who, like, practices the law badly. Like, I don't know, it wasn't very consistent with him. He was either, like, doing his best or it looked like he just didn't care at all. And a lot of times it was at the same time somehow.
Like all CW shows, law is just a suggestion and the sheriff gets to decide everything.
Yeah. For example, when he arrested Gomez, and it's been something that he's been trying to do for like a million years. It was like 2 decades at that point at least, right?
Yeah.
And then he arrested him and then the mayor pardoned him And at the end, Gomez left and like they shook hands and they looked friendly and chatted. And yeah. That made no sense.
Also, I don't think mayors have pardon powers for murder. I think that's a governor thing.
I don't know. But I do, like, now that you said it, I do agree it was very strange that they did not say more about the school.
Yeah. Like, it's so weird to me that, like, it's just like, yeah, monsters exist, and there are some that are so dangerous that we had to not allow them into the school.
And there are, like, yeah. Secret passages and dark hidden safes with books and stuff. Like, yeah, they had everything.
Everyone can go off campus whenever they want. Like, Gwendolyn Christie, whatever, her character, Larissa Weems, who's the principal, announces that the school is on lockdown, and then it, like, cut to a scene of Wednesday.
And all of them are just, like, in the cafe in town.
Yeah, like, it cut to a scene, like, right after she said that, to Wednesday, like, breaking that lockdown. It's like, okay, so that was not actually a thing then. It was just very funny how little, like, the school of monsters who can, you know, like, some of them are gorgons. They could turn people to stone with a single look. And there's just, I don't know, it's just weird to me. I know, like, whenever you have a show like this and you start trying to, like, break it down analytically, it gets silly. But, like, I just thought it was kind of funny. And yet Wednesday is the big threat here, even though she has zero powers beyond the ability to have kind of crappy dreams that don't tell her anything helpful.
Was going to say, when you talked about her powers, right? The reason I don't really care what kind of power she has, and that the, like, the visions were just, like, a nice detail, yeah, is I really like how competent they made her, but also how she just constantly messed up.
Yeah.
Like, she was never succeeding.
Right.
I love a character that fails. And Wednesday has failed everything up until the last moments in the last episode where she succeeded. Yeah. And I think that's also extremely satisfying. And it wasn't like dumb failure either, right? Because she collected all the clues.
Yeah.
Certain things pointed to certain characters and she pursued that. And she very often acts like rashly and she like rushes into decisions and stuff, which is a good character trait for someone who's supposed to be very stoic.
Yeah, right? She acts like a teenager.
Yeah, and I really enjoy that. And the fact that, like, the theme of friendship is, it's very on the page, let's just say. We have Xavier give her a speech about friendship, and then we have Enid give her a speech about friendship. And, like, we have Tyler give her a speech about, like, relationship, I guess?
Yeah.
And, like, there was an entire episode where every single student that she goes to school with kind of came up to her and was like, "You're a bad friend, Wednesday, and you need to fix that because we're upset." And, like, it's very in your face. It's there.
Yeah.
But at the same time, usually that would annoy me so badly and I would just make fun of it. But here they did it in a really fun way. I don't know what it is. Maybe the chemistry between the actors, or just, like, the fact that I really like a lot of the characters. But, like, it was fun to watch. I do have a complaint.
And okay, let's hear this complaint.
And, like, this drove me nuts. And I want to hear your thoughts on this.
Okay, I'm excited.
Every single boy that likes her, which is the two boys, Xavier and Tyler.
Yeah.
How many times have they said, like, have they walked up to Wednesday and been like, "Hey, you didn't change for me, and I thought you would"? Did that not drive you just absolutely bonkers?
It was a little, like, ridiculous how much she's surrounded by these, like, mediocre dudes who are insisting that she become more mediocre.
Right? Literally, the whole thing is that they like her because she is weird.
Yeah.
She's weird. And, like, I guess I'm not one to talk. Those are my favorite types of characters. Like, the mean character. You know this. Everyone knows this. Everyone in the world knows that I like mean characters. And Wednesday is mean. Right?
So she is a total Val character. She fails at everything and she's mean.
So I don't blame the guys for, like, being infatuated with this character, but then they, without fail, two or three times throughout the show, both of them, have walked up to her and gotten really mad and upset because she stayed exactly the same around them, even though they developed a deeper crush on her. And every time they said something like, I thought we were growing closer, or like, I thought something was happening between us, and she just stares at them blankly and remains the same character as she always is. Like, that made me lose my mind.
Yeah.
I don't know, like, what it...
I mean, I found both of the guys to be pretty, I don't know, awful. It's clearly trying to set up this weird kind of love triangle, Wednesday, Tyler, Xavier.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe Bianca, so there's a square, who knows. It just, it was annoying that they kept trying to change Wednesday. And
they also had that weird scene where, like, Xavier really used Bianca and asked her to, like, charm him into liking her.
Oh, yeah, that was really weird.
That felt bad. That felt weird. Because they were doing something.
I don't know what the point of that was.
I think that they were trying to do something with Bianca, and either it got cut, or they were setting it up for season two, but they went in too strong right away.
Yeah, because there's this whole thing of Bianca's being a siren, and so I guess there's this undercurrent, and must probably cut, of this idea of, like, consent, and about can anyone who's in a relationship with a siren truly be consenting to it? Because even though the sirens wear necklaces that, like, inhibit their powers, supposedly, like, it's not perfect.
Yeah, and then he, like, uses it against her, and we're supposed to keep thinking of him as a nice guy.
Yeah.
That's the thing that was really strange. And I think we really only have it with male characters in the show. They do all the nasty things. Like, Bianca cheats at the competition game thing, right? But, like, everyone cheats.
Yeah.
We literally see every single team cheating in some capacity.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe not, like, the first one that gets eliminated, because they just get eliminated so early. But every person who lasted for most of that challenge, they all cheated. That's how Wednesday's team won, right? So in that sense, even then, Bianca wasn't, like, the only person who was, you know, being a horrible, unsportsmanlike student, you know?
Yeah.
With the fencing scene, yeah, she was mean to Wednesday, but people are allowed to be mean. And she defeated her with her skills.
Yeah.
There's a baby crying. My goodness.
Is that what that is? Also, you're going to have to cut out Justice's snoring, so.
A lot of it's kind of like evening, so I think everyone's just home.
Yeah.
So a lot is happening. It's fine.
It's
fine. It's just going to be a busy episode. But yeah, like, Bianca shows a lot of skill and shows a lot of character growth. And just character in general. Yeah, she's gonna be mad at the girl who kind of stole her boyfriend. And when she realizes that Wednesday doesn't care about Xavier, she stops being jealous. She gets over him because he is not the type of person she wants to be around. He is truly mean. Not like, you know, I'm gonna talk to a stranger who's challenging me and I'm gonna, like, not let her walk all over me. I'm going to defend my position as captain of the team. No, this is different. He was very personally, deeply offending her. And she reacted appropriately. So, like, I think out of every single character in the show, Bianca probably had the most growth and the quietest growth.
Yes, I agree with that.
Yeah, I wouldn't even say it was growth. I feel like it was more of a character reveal than growth. Because she kind of started off like that, too. She was already friends with Ajax and, like, the people from the secret society. She was never mean to them. We don't see her being mean to her friends or people around her, just to Wednesday, because Wednesday's right. Kind of invading a lot of her spaces.
And Wednesday's kind of really awful the first couple seasons. Or seasons, episodes.
Episodes, yeah. Wednesday is rude.
Yeah, like...
I can't say the word that she is, but she is that word.
Definitely. I don't know. Can I switch gears?
Absolutely.
What did you think of Christina Ricci as Marilyn Thornhill / Laurel Gates?
I thought they could do a little more than just, like, the last episode she acts. Because I feel like they just kind of either couldn't get her to be on more episodes, or I don't know what it was, but she was there too little. I'm still not sure what she does. Is she a botany teacher? Is she
Teacher and the dorm mother. She introduces herself as the dorm mother.
Yes, that's what I thought she was. And then she started teaching botany. And then she was kind of like a guidance counselor. And, like, there's a lot of roles she was filling, but a lot of those roles were, like, inconsequential and kind of, like, unnoticeable, really. I thought they could have done a little bit more with her. But also, I just genuinely enjoyed her in this.
Well, I do like that she is the original Wednesday.
Yeah. That is, from the 90s. When I've seen her, I didn't know she was in this, but when I've seen her, like, in it, I got so giddy.
But, like, her character, I agree with you. Like, speaking of foreshadowing, I feel like it was pretty obvious to me that there was something up with her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. From the get-go. Pretty early on, I think I got a sense that, like, she's totally going to be the nice teacher who turns out to be bad.
Absolutely.
Like, she's too nice, and everyone else is being mean to Wednesday, and the one nice person is going to be turn out to be bad. So that's how this goes. Mm-hmm. And then the moment they were like, oh, the hide, the monster is working with someone, I was like, okay, they're going to fake it out. We're going to think it's the therapist, but it's actually the botany teacher. And, like, I called that pretty quickly.
Yeah.
I think
before we get that scene of the flowers in the hospital room.
Yeah.
Like, even before that, it's fairly obvious that it's her.
Yeah.
I think there's enough emphasis on her in a way where there's not enough emphasis on the therapist.
Yeah.
Even though the therapist is a bigger character.
She kind of disappears, which is unfortunate because I really like Ricky Lindholm. I'm a big fan of Garfunkel and Oates, which is the comedy duo that she's in. And it was unfortunate to me that she starts off with, like, more of a presence. And then I feel like as the season... This is the weird thing, because the first four episodes are directed by Tim Burton, and the next four other people. And I think this is what happens. We've talked about this before, of, like,
mm-hmm.
sometimes another director comes in and I feel like loses interest in what the other director was doing.
Weird. Why did they do that? The work's already there.
Yeah. And it's just like, and I feel like the therapist is one of those characters who falls victim to that. Cause, like, we have these interesting scenes of, like, Wednesday getting therapy early on, and that just totally disappears. That just ends.
It ends. Do you remember when they showed Dr. Kinbot's, like, closet full of taxidermied animals?
What was that about? She's got this weird, like, there's all these things that we're never going to learn about because we just learned that she died. Like, she has this weird taxidermied mouse collection. Was that just, did they just put that scene in there to, like, imply that maybe she's a villain, I guess? I don't know, but it was just kind of, like... But
the way that they showed it, it was cute.
Yeah.
It was, like, a passion. Not, like, a weird, creepy... They were legitimately well-taxidermied little animals. Like, it didn't feel ominous in any way, even though the narration was so ominous. They're like, even when people have dark secrets, and they show this closet full of, like... just these carefully handled animals. And her looking so, like, excited to add a new one to it.
Yeah, it was... I feel like they wasted her. I feel like they wasted Christina Ricci a little. I think both of them should have gotten more screen time. I know it's hard when you only... This is one of those things where it's like the 8-episode season kind of doesn't do favors to what could probably be a 10-episode season and give more characters time to breathe. Because I think mm-hmm. Bianca could have used more time to breathe. And I think Enid and her relationship with, what's his name, Ajax, could have gotten a little more. Because, like, there's a lot of scenes where, like, Enid and Ajax, we see their relationship kind of progressing, but it's very quick. And again, I don't know, this is like the Netflix breakneck speed thing that a lot of people online have, like, taken issue with. So I guess we're just doing more of that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I will say, okay. Do you have, like, a favorite character, though?
That's a tough one. I'm going to go with Enid.
She is so good.
I like that she's kind of just true to herself Mm-hmm. She just does what she thinks is right, and she's trying her best to do the best by everyone. And it's nice to have a character like that.
It is very nice. And, like, out of all the characters that could have been Wednesday's best friend, not just the fact that she's, like, the sunny personality, but there's enough of a balance between the two of them that they are the same character, in a sense. And it's so good. I don't even know, like, how to really explain it because just of how much that Enid is a really, really good character. I do, like, when she turned into the werewolf finally, like, a fully-fledged werewolf.
Yeah.
I a little bit wish they didn't do that, because yeah. I liked her having a complex about it. Like, that was just a really fun little character thing that she had that was really awesome.
Yeah.
I know what they needed to do it, and I did like it, because we got the hug at the end. But just, like, I really liked that she very clearly had her own story that she was going through, and she's the main character of her story. Like, it felt like she was Wednesday's best friend, that they did balance each other out. And remember when, after it got stabbed, and it's, and he's recuperating, and she comes back to dorm with Wednesday, and she's like, I'm gone for, like, a day, and everything falls apart. Obviously, you can't be without me.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that is something that Wednesday would say.
Yes.
And something that Wednesday does say. Like, she never admits to a thing. She says she, like, very passively, roundabout, gets to a topic, or says the things that she wants to mean, but will not, because she's stubborn. And Enid has a lot of that, too. I really like it. I feel like I've just been talking over you every time. I'm sorry.
It's fine. No, I think you're more passionate about the show in general, whereas I am not. It's fine. I don't know. Like, would I watch it again? I guess. Maybe. Will I watch a season two? Yeah, if we're going to record an episode on it. But overall, this was decidedly mid.
It was very decidedly mid.
Yeah.
I wholeheartedly agree with you on that.
What else is there? I don't know if I have anything else to say to summarize this. The casting was excellent. I think the writing was fine.
Yeah, the writing wasn't, like, awful. I know we talked a lot about it. Yeah, it wasn't, like, CW. It wasn't bad. It was just not as coherent as it started.
Yeah.
It could have been a little more put together. Like, a lot of things didn't necessarily make that much sense.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't know why Wednesday's, like, ancestor was in this. Like,
I don't know. Like, the whole pilgrim versus outcast thing was interesting. It is always interesting to me when there's something that portrays the pilgrims, who, at least in our society as Americans, are often portrayed as, like, our forefathers who came here and founded this country in a savage land. And so it's always nice to see them portrayed as villainous.
Mm-hmm. You know what it reminded me of?
What?
Fear Street.
Yep. It's that's what I was going to compare it to, actually. Yeah, it's very similar to Fear Street in that, like, the pilgrims are the bad guys, because it turns out, actually, they were very, well, puritanical in every sense of the world. Word. Yes. So, yeah, I don't know. And I thought the pilgrim guy, he did a really good job being really awful, like, when he gets resurrected and just telling Laurel, like, basically, like, shut up. Like,
stop speaking, woman.
Yeah, it was just like, yeah.
And her just walking away.
She says some line like, never meet your heroes or something. Yeah, yeah. And it's like, oh, that's a good one. That was pretty good.
Yeah, there's a lot of, like little feminist one-liners that felt somewhat kind of, like, put in there just to be there, which was weird. Like, Wednesday started off as uber-feminist in, like, a weird way. But then I feel like progressively the show moved away from that and made it a more natural, just, like, state of being, which is way more enjoyable to watch, because people who don't want to notice it don't notice it. People who do notice it, like, aren't, you know, like, for example, I do like that in my media. But I hate when they, like, say it. Remember there was a scene where Morticia and Wednesday go to the mayor? I think it was the mayor. And they're like, you don't know what it's like not to be listened to. and it is set as like a period,
yeah,
end of conversation, yeah, and the mayor gets it all of a sudden. Like, I don't like those scenes.
Well,
but I
the,
do
the
like
the frustrating this thing is the mayor is an African American man, and it's like,
it, yeah, that's what
not
I'm saying.
To like compare like different forms of discrimination, but I think an African American man understands what it feels like to not be listened to.
Exactly. And then I was going to say there are a lot of like more natural ways that they show that. For example, with Principal Weems, right? It's very clear she doesn't have as much power as the sheriff or the mayor does, but she holds a lot of power in the way that she conducts herself, right? And there's a reason she conducts herself that way. And we as audience understand that.
Yeah.
And like there are a lot of little things like that that work to say really important kind of like feminist ideas. And then there are the one-liners of like, you don't know what it's like. That those one-liners didn't work for me, but I feel like, yeah, after two or three episodes they kind of went away, which is good.
Yes. Okay, so we're like running out of time, but let me so like I feel like this show was meant for like a younger audience. And so let's imagine you have like, I guess this isn't hard for you to imagine, a younger sibling who was like in the age range for this. Like, would you have them watch this? Like, let's say they're like, I don't know, 13 or 14 maybe. Is that,
yeah,
the right,
absolutely,
age range for this? Yeah, I think so.
Well, my sister's 19 and she enjoys it a lot. My, okay, brother's girlfriend is 19. She also really likes the show in a very similar way to my sister.
Okay.
And Zach is 12 and he kind of was like in the room when I watched either the, yeah, first or second episode, and he was, you know, keeping an eye on the TV the whole time.
Okay.
So I think it is, and there's some cursing in it, but it's a very age-appropriate show.
You know, like, I run that D&D game for the 13-year-olds, and I'm just like, the next session, because we haven't had one since Wednesday came out, I'm like, one, at least one of them is going to try and be Wednesday in our D&D game. I'm sure about it.
As they should.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there are certainly worse role models to have. It's just going to be pretty funny. I don't know how well Wednesday translates to, as a D&D character.
Probably really well. I feel like I played a Wednesday before.
Oh, really? Who?
I feel like Theo was a failure Wednesday, like a worse Wednesday.
Okay. I can see it. Anyway, I think before we start digressing, yeah, into talking about our...
Do you have any closing thoughts, Chloe?
No, I think it's fine. I don't know. I don't have much else. What about you?
We didn't talk about this at all, but just like as a honorary mention, it is a gorgeous show.
Oh, yeah. God, we didn't talk about stylistic, but it is beautiful.
It is beautiful. It is aesthetically pleasing. It is very theater-like. It's so staged, but,
yeah,
it's staged so well, and I really like that.
Yes. Cool.
And with, yeah, that, tell us what we have. Tell us what the people can look up.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. I just want to mention some of our social media. Our Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest is at InMediaLez. Our subreddit is r/InMediaLez. Our Tumblr is...
thepodinmedialez.tumblr.com, and it's great.
It's perfect in every way. Our
it
website,
is perfect.
Our website is inmedialez.com, and you can email us at inmedialez@gmail.com. Thank you to everyone who rates, likes, subscribes, whatever it is you're doing, interacting with us, acknowledging our existence in some small way gives us enough endorphins to make it through another work day. That was really depressed. That was really depressed. I don't know why I said it like that.
It's enough for me to talk to you, Chloe. I get, yeah, enough endorphins and all the dolphins and every happiness
more
from that.
I need more.
But Chloe needs a little more. She doesn't like me as much.
I mean, sometimes.
Sometimes. But I did, okay, get you that shirt, so.
Yeah, that's true. Oh my God, we need to post that shirt. I will post that tomorrow.
Anyway, I was very excited to give it to you. But anyway, we'll see you in the next one, friends.
And God bless you.
worked for 11 hours.
Why?
Because I started at 7, and then I had to go a little late because we didn't have time today, because it was a madhouse.
Oh, God.
Oh, customer service jobs.